live, and we are back. And we are tonight with Dave Spinks. Let me see here quick. You are the co-founder and owner of Society of the Supernatural and founder and owner at Real Supernatural. Correct?
Yep, that's right.
All right, cool. And so what got you interested and started in the paranormal?
Well, what really, you know, what really kind of set me off on my own journey was I had a Bigfoot experience with my late grandfather, who was a Baptist minister for 40 plus years. And the whole experience was very terrifying. And but at the same time, I was super intrigued about it and wanted answers as to what I saw, because I had never really heard of Bigfoot, so to speak. You know, around here in West Virginia, the old timers talk about the woolly boogers and the blue demons and this and that, but you don't really put two and two together. And I realized then that's what they were all talking about. You know, they're every county in West Virginia has a different name basically for Bigfoot, man. They call it by so many names, but in reality, they're talking about the same type of creature. So, you know, I had that experience. I've told it on TV. I've written about it in my Bigfoot book. And basically, you know, I'll give you the long and short of it was me and my grandpa were fishing at one of our favorite spots. I was 13 years old. It was 1983. Mm-hmm. Place we had been to many, many times. Got there, you know, we're going to spend the entire weekend there camping out and everything. Set up all of our gear, started fishing. Out of nowhere, I caught a really nice trout right off the bat. You know, we caught all of our trout. We limited out, and we cooked them up and had it eaten. And it was just before dark now. It was just that twilight. You know, you could still see good, but the darkness was setting in.
Right.
And we were sitting there just full, you know, going, man. I mean, we ate like, you know, champions there. We were just stuffed. And out of nowhere, this giant splash hits out in the middle of the river. Now, the river where we were at that point was from one bank to the other was about anywhere from 60 to 75 yards across. The other side of the bank was really steep, really rugged, and it's an area that people just don't really fish because it's too hard to get down in. It's in a big canyon, you know, and it's rocky. It's dangerous on that other side.
Right.
So this big splash happens out in the middle of the river, and the splash was so big that it rained down water. It wasn't just a rock this big or this big. This is a rock that had to be massive. But neither one of us saw it. We just heard the big splash and the deep kawoom and then the rain down the water, right? So we jump up, we're looking around, we're trying to figure out what the heck made that splash. And at this point, we didn't know it was a rock. So after several minutes of looking around, we were thinking maybe a big tree branch fell in the river, but we couldn't find it. You know, we would have seen that floating. There was nothing floating, nothing. No, and there's rock cliffs, so then we're trying to rationalize, well, maybe a rock rolled off, but to me, that didn't make sense because we would have heard that thing just bouncing down the mountain and kaboom, right. You know. So after several minutes, we kind of just said, well, chalk it up as that was weird, and sat back down, and we're enjoying our fire. And then just a few minutes later, it had to be no more than 2 minutes, I heard something hitting the tree limbs, like, you know how – say if you throw something that's whooshing through the tree limbs, you can hear it hitting. And out of my peripheral, I look and I see a massive boulder. I mean, something I couldn't even get my arms around today. Come shooting up in an upwards direction through the tree limbs on the other side of the river and come out and land in the water. Well, I know my grandpa seen it too because we both jumped up and we were freaking out. What the hell? You know, and he's like, in his mind, you know, he thinks it's people over there messing with us. And he yells out, you hoodlums, knock it off, or I'm going to, you know, I'm going to let you have it. So I turn to look at him as he's saying that. He's running back to the tent, and I know he's going to get his little thing. You know, he always carried a gun of some sort in the woods. Mm-hmm. He goes back to our tent and grabs his single shot squirrel gun. And he comes back, and about the time he gets back to me, he hears god-awful guttural howling, just, I mean, come out from that side of the woods. Like, so it was so powerful. Like, if you ever been to a rock concert or a concert where the bass of the drum is so heavy, oh, yeah, you can feel it inside you, That's how this thing roared, man. And I'm telling you, it still sends shivers from my head to my toe to this day. So that thing lets out this guttural howl like you wouldn't. I mean, it's so hard to describe, but it's just lucid, man. I mean, it's just powerful. And after that happened, starts cracking off shots over in that direction, yelling back out there, and said, "I told you, knuckleheads, I'm gonna, let you have it." Now my grandpa he's storming beaches at Normandy, World War II veteran. He did not mess around, and this man was not afraid of anything. So while that's going on, that thing's over there starts raising all kinds of cane, shaking trees that are 40, 50, 60 foot tall, big saplings that a man couldn't move. This thing's raising cane, howling, screaming over there, and making one god-awful ruckus. And you can see the trees shaking from this thing, right? So he yells at me, he says, "Get to the truck, boy." And so I run to the truck. It's about 20, 30 yards from us, parked kind of at an angle. And I get down by the front left tire, and I'm peeking around like this, looking in that direction where all this ruckus is coming from, while my grandpa cracked off 5, 6, I don't even know how many shots, but anywhere from 5 to 8, 9 shots with a single shot. So he's just like racking rounds and unloading it, racking another one, boom, fast as he could go. And then you see this where the trees are shaking, it starts moving in an upwards away from us direction. And you can follow this thing's path by the way the trees are moving. So this was going on. This is all happening in a matter of like 3 minutes. And as I'm watching the trail of this thing, there's a clearing. And it comes into this clearing, and I see it from about the waist up. Huge hair creature covered in hair, little tiny head and massive shoulders that was probably double the size of my grandfather. And my grandfather was 6'4". He was a massive man. This thing dwarfed him, and I could see it from 6 yards, like it was right there. It never looked at me. I never saw any facial features. It had no neck, a little bitty head, and just pure muscle. You could see through the hair. And the hair was like a dark, dark, dark brown, almost black, with some red striations in it. And it just kept on walking away. And my grandfather, that's when I knew he saw it, because he came running. And he grabs me with one arm, opens the truck door, and slings me through the cab of the truck. And the only thing that stopped me was the passenger side door. I slammed into it like that. He jumps in. He said, "We're getting out of here, son. That's not of God." So he jams that truck, man. And it's like a 3-mile drive up out of this dirt road down into the, into the canyon that's full of potholes. It's just a really rough road. He's bottoming that truck out. And the whole time I've got my head buried in my hands like this going, oh my God, he's going to break the truck and that thing's going to kill us, So what felt like an eternity, we get up there, we make it and we start driving around. He's not saying a word. And it sounded like pieces of the truck were falling off of this thing. I mean, that's, we're bottoming out, bang, bang, boom. Yeah. We finally get on the hard road, drive around for about like a half an hour. He finally pulls off the road and he said, "Son, we better not tell no one about this. They're going to think we're crazy." And here he's a preacher. He has a flock to worry about and everything. And so we kind of made a promise from that day on never to talk about it. So the crazy thing is I kept my end of the promise. So, here I am all these years, and I've been, my name's known in the paranormal. And I get this question a lot. I never told it, because I made that promise. And finally, my grandfather he passed away. It's been about 5 years ago now. And finally, I decided, I get this question all the time on radio shows and everything, and I'm going to start talking about it, because this is what really started me on my journey into the paranormal back in 1983. And I really didn't start investigating per se until like 86, 87, when I saw the show In Search Of and saw what they were doing. And I said, "Hey, I got a recorder just like that. I can do that," So I just started reading and researching because I wanted to know what Bigfoot was. I never heard of this thing before, in that aspect. And that's when I discovered the Patterson-Gimlin film. I didn't know nothing about any of that stuff. Just heard the old timers talk about woolly boogers and stuff here in West Virginia, right? So the funny part is, so I decided I was going to start talking about this story, and I'd already written it in a book I was working on. I just never released it. And I called my uncle because I wanted the family to know, hey, I'm going to start talking publicly about this. And he's like, oh, you're talking about that time you and Papaw saw the monkey man in the woods. And I'm like, wait a minute. He told you? He said, oh, yeah. I said, he said, yeah, he told me that story like 25 years ago. Because he said, if something happens to me, I want other people to know what we saw that day. You know, so he told my uncle. And here I've been sitting on it all these years, you know, and I was like, oh, man. But, you know, that's basically how it all went down. If you saw the show Terror in the Woods or These Woods Are Haunted that I told that story on, they did a really good job. But only thing I have gripes about is they added a few things that didn't happen. And then they switched some stuff around in the order they happened. So that's frustrating about the TV aspect of it. But if you want to know the real story, read my book, West Virginia Bigfoot. It's available on Amazon, and you can get signed copies directly from me if you email me. Okay. And it's got a lot of other – it doesn't have just my story. It has – I've got stories from state troopers, doctors, lawyers, teachers, all in West Virginia. Some people were visiting. Yep, that's it right there. That had witnessed a creature similar to what I saw here in West Virginia. So – it affected me very, very negatively. I didn't go in the woods by myself or deep in the woods for like 6 or 7 years after that. Wow. And now to this day, I don't even go in the woods unless I have a heavy caliber firearm with me.
How you doing, Dale?
Yeah. So you mentioned the Patterson-Gimley film. How close in resemblance to what was on that film that was the creature?
Very, very similar. When I first saw that the clip of that, I was like, that's what I saw, no doubt about it. Except, of course, that one was a female, and I don't think the one I saw was a female. It was massive. This thing, I mean, you could literally see the muscle striations in this thing, man. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just built like a brick, you know. I mean, you know what house. And I mean, it was – and the head on this thing looked tiny compared to its body. It had no neck. It was just all broad shoulders, and it was like a wedge. This thing was like a wedge, man. And I got a really good look at it for a good 15 to 30 seconds, you know. Yeah. And for whatever reason, it was just tearing the woods down and never looked back at us, you know, in our direction when it went through that.
Maybe it was a little tick that your grandfather was shooting at it.
Yeah. I mean, I got the feeling
he may have nicked it.
Yeah, he probably peppered it a few times, I'm sure. But, you know, at that range, it's not going to hurt nothing. Might burn it a little bit. But.
Right.
With the kind of gun he was using, but
you said it was a squirrel gun. Is that one of those 410 shotguns?
I think it was a 12 gauge, but still, it only had squirrel shot in it, you know, because we kept one around for snakes and different things like that, you know. So, okay. But when I reassessed it so many times, you know, ran it through my head over and over, it was almost like it was pissed that we were there because we were catching those fish. And we were in its territory for what? And we'd been there, I mean, many, many times over the years. I grew up fishing there, you know. Never saw anything. But later on, I found out that my grandpa that was with me, his wife, her brother was down around that same area some years before us cutting firewood. And he said, because he told my uncle this, the one that told me my grandpa told him the story. He was down there cutting firewood. You know, you got the chainsaw running. You don't hear anything. And he looked up, and there was a Bigfoot standing 10 feet away from him. And he said he flipped backwards over the log, almost cut his leg off. And he never went back down there. And then over my years of research, I've talked to many, many people here in the area, in the local area, that have claimed to have seen these creatures walking in that same area and in the river and everything else. So it's all in that Bigfoot book. And that's, you know, I wrote that several years ago, and now I'm getting ready to come out with a new one, probably late 2021. So, with more people's accounts and other things like that. But, you know, it's a fascinating thing. It's also very scary. You know, I don't try to change anyone's mind on this stuff. I just share my experiences and other people's experiences. They can take, you know, make what they want out of it. I'm not here to, you know. I'm not here to it's like religion and politics. You know, you can't change anyone's mind unless they have their own experience. So I just share with what I, you know, with what I had and other people have had. You know, I look, when you have the people, the caliber of people that I have in my books, like law enforcement officers, doctors, lawyers, in this new book, I even have a prosecuting attorney. I mean, these people have something to lose by going out and talking about this stuff. So, you know, that's what's key for me as well.
Right. So you've done a lot of interviews with different witnesses and,
I mean,
pretty much the same thing.
Well, basically on my website, if you guys checked it out, I got a hot, I have a hotline on there. People can call me with any kind of sightings, experiences. And if they want me to come out and investigate, show me, you know, share any kind of proof, pictures, whatever, you know, I'll go out and investigate their location and tell their story for them, you know, put their story in my books and whatnot. Because I think it's important. That's knowledge is power. The more we talk about these things, the more information we have.
That's under his contact on his website.
Okay. Yep.
So you got the map of West Virginia up there. Have you been? Have you thought about maybe putting little pinpoints of where a lot of the sightings have been seen?
Well, that's Google Maps. I don't know if they'll let me do that, but yeah. I mean, I've got a whole bunch of them, and it seems here in the state, the hot spots are the Monongahela National Forest. That's one of the main hot spots here in West Virginia. It's a vast expanse of land that's very rugged, very rural. Not a lot of people at all out there. There's places out there that people probably haven't walked on in 100 years. You know, that's how rugged it is. And it goes all the way up into Pennsylvania. There's a corridor, and it runs into right into Chestnut Ridge, which if you guys know anything about Chestnut Ridge, it's a super hot spot for Bigfoot, UFOs, and hauntings as well. So I think these things are like people. You know, there's different colors of them. They're kind of like different races, so to speak, or right. different genomes. But they're all the same type of creature. There's different sizes of them. I also feel that they are nomadic and they move around a lot where they go where the food is. But like here in West Virginia, you know, for example, there's plenty of caves for these things to stay in, plenty of cover, plenty of food. And they can, you know, it's very rural and rugged area. Like, where I live right here, I can drive down the road not even a mile, and I'm surrounded by just millions of acres of rugged woodland that's national forest that people just don't go very deep into.
Right, right. Yeah, I know the cave systems in the United States are actually fairly extensive. I've seen some layover maps of the cave systems here. So you were talking about that corridor and everything. Do you... You were saying earlier before we came on that you also deal in more than just the cryptids. You have an interest in like the UFOs and stuff like that too?
Oh, absolutely. I've written numerous books on various topics. You know, I've done hundreds upon hundreds of haunting investigations. But for me, and I've done my fair share of UFO investigations, interviews, and abduction cases and the whole, I get it all, man, on that. You know, people... Like right now, I'm probably backed up for 7 months on investigations. You know, I mean, just I'm only one man. I can only get to what I can get to. But, right. And of course, you got the Willow's Weep book up there, which is a house I bought just to have my own paranormal lab, a famous haunted house, well-known haunted house. And I bought it just to
Bought a haunted house.
Yes.
Wow.
That's pretty
cool. I didn't find that in my research.
Yeah,
hard enough.
It's on the website there. It'll tell you all about it, and it's in that book. You know, talks about how I first became to investigate it, and then became friends with the former owner. And after some time, she said that she felt the house tried to kill her and her husband a couple of different times, and she asked me if I wanted it, and I said, "Well, let me think about that because it's a very negative haunting." So we talked about it and came to terms, and I ended up buying it because I said, "Well, what better of a place to have to actually have your own paranormal lab to study the paranormal, you know, set up different experiments, run cameras in there, you know, try to document paranormal phenomena." I mean, that's what it's all about. We're trying to scientifically move the field forward as much as possible right now, as much as you can, you know, with the word paranormal, because it's the unknown. We don't know how these things work. We don't know why they're here, what they're doing, who they actually are. So, you know, it's just a baby step forward, man. So if I find one little piece of the puzzle, it's all worth it to me.
Yeah. All it is theories right now. Everybody's got their own theories. Nothing's
been and I think a lot of these things are interconnected, man. If you do any kind of research and you look at a lot of times people are making the connections in recent years when there's a rash of Bigfoot sightings, there's also a rash of strange lights in the sky and vice versa.
I was just going to come up with that after that. with your interviews of the witnesses to the Bigfoot sightings, did they say anything to you about seeing any kind of phenomena in the sky?
In some cases, they also talk about, you know, that same night or the day before, we saw these strange lights in the sky and then we saw this, and then, or vice versa. You know, it's happening. It seems to be happening more and more often now. And if you even go back to some of the older cases, the well-known cases, the same thing happened. Look at the Day at Love Pass incident. I mean, the locals talk about that area as being, you know, of the devil, so in their language, and it's an evil place. But there, and the local tribes there, the night that all went down, they saw strange lights in the sky. And then next thing you know, they find all those people dead, and some of them had massive amounts of radiation still on their bodies. They were measuring it. And there's supposedly Yeti or Bigfoot pictures of creatures that may have killed these people.
Wow. That is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. So in your studies of the Bigfoot, I'm going to stay on Bigfoot for a second here. In your studies of them, did you find any like evidence or information of
Mount St. Helens? Oh yeah, well that, you know, when you research
back
that
in 80, one, back in 80 when that blew up, there was a retired Army National Guard, I believe. The guy did an interview, and it's somewhere on YouTube, and I haven't been able to find it yet. Mm-hmm. And it's only audio; there's no video to it. But he claims that there were dead bodies and live bodies of Bigfoots on the mountain that they actually recovered.
Yeah. I have read and heard things. There was eyewitness, multiple eyewitnesses, not just one guy. It was multiple eyewitnesses that said they saw military choppers carrying big nets with dead Bigfoot bodies in those nets off the mountain. And then, of course, you touched on that. Other people said they saw a live body once too. Mm-hmm. So there's stories from military members, like in training maneuvers in the Pacific Northwest, where they were paralleled by groups of Bigfoot at night during their training missions. There's a lot of Vietnam veterans that said they've had outright fights with what they called the rock apes of Vietnam. You know, these things were highly, highly agile and violent towards them. And even some claim that some of their buddies were killed by some of these ape-like creatures. So, and the locals talk about it to this day. You know, they call them the rock apes. So, you know, it's another term for Bigfoot. You know, these things are seen all over the world, and what they are, we don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different theories out there. Some people feel they're extraterrestrial. Some people feel they are interdimensional. If you go to Native American lore and Native American history, they've got rock art and cave drawings of these things that have been proven to be thousands of years old. They have in their oral traditions, they talk about having fought these creatures. They call them the woods people or whatever. And they came to all the tribes seem to come to some agreement that that's their area over there. They mark it. You stay out of it. And this is our area over here. So, you know, there's a lot of incidents where, you know, various tribes, almost every tribe in the United States has some type of historical tale of having encounters with these types of creatures. And for me, that says a lot. You know, that says a lot for me. These things go back for thousands of years. What they are, what they're doing here, who knows? You know, some people think they could be a ghost of a long extinct ape species because there's stories of, say, hunters. They see one in the woods when they're hunting, so they're following the tracks. They lose sight of the thing for just a moment. They get to that spot, and then the track stop, and the thing just is gone. Yeah. So, what do you make out of that? Did it go into a portal or what?
There are some theorists that believe that the Bigfoot is an ancient, is a remnant of an ancient species called the Gigantopithecus, which is just a giant ape, like the silverback gorilla and stuff. Only it's supposed to be bigger. It's supposed to be way bigger.
Way bigger, yeah.
Well, look how the tracks, they found those tracks up in the Himalayas. You know, and it's almost impossible for modern man to get to that location where those tracks actually were.
Yep.
You know, to get down there in the snow. You know, back then, what do they call it there? The Yeti. That's the what Yeti. It's called there. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you take that into account, why, if it's so dangerous for man to get up to those types of altitudes and everything, I find it very hard to believe that they would, going through what they went through just to climb that peak or those peaks, why would they go up there and try to fake some kind of monster evidence that, right. You know, it's a feat upon itself just to do what they're doing.
Right.
Tom came up with a good one here. He said Nephilim, and Nephilims are basically the children of human females and fallen angels.
Yep.
They're supposed to be giants. The Nephilim are supposed to be giants.
Very vile, very disgusting. If you do any research on the Nephilim, they were said to eat men, you know, and it would take two normal sized men just to come standing on top of each other, just to come up to their knees. That's how big these things were. And if you follow the stories of the giants, which we know are true, there has been giant skeletons found all over the earth. Some claim to have been up to 20 feet tall. Some have double rows of teeth. Right here in West Virginia, there's numerous giant skeletons that have been found. So are those offspring of these things, or what are they, you know? So, and it seems like almost in every case when a giant skeleton was uncovered, the government agents from Smithsonian would swoop in and scoop these skeletons up, never to be heard from again. You know, it happened over and over.
Never to be seen, never to be heard. Yep. They lock them away, and nobody gets to look at them except for their people.
They got them in the vault down there.
I believe it. I agree with it. So, anyway, Joe, did you get my message there?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to be right back because I need to use the bathroom. I really
All right.
I'm sorry, this is a first.
It happens. Nature calls.
Yeah, sometimes. So that's an interesting, I mean, there's so many theories about Bigfoot that, you know, and then there's so little lack of proof except for, you know, of course, they've got the hairs out there, but some of those hairs have been defined as bear or whatever. But then there's those that they can't put it with any species because it's not in their computer database.
Mm-hmm.
So unidentified.
Yeah,
and then with all those casts coming from all over the world, basically, because you've got it, or Japan, you know, whatever, you know, Vietnam, they've all got their version and they've got these casts, you know, but it's not enough proof yet. It's like, what do they need? You know,
that's the interesting point, man. So I'll give you an example, a case I worked here in West Virginia. So this farmer in a rural area wakes up one morning, there's about 6 inches of snow on the ground, and there's a trackway coming out of his field across the two-lane paved road up into his yard, goes under his clothesline and up behind his house into the woods. Well, the stride length between these cracks was like 62 inches.
That's like 6 feet.
Yep. So whatever, and they're humanoid tracks. They're in the snow, but before, they tried to make some casts of them. Of course, they were real iffy because of the snow and everything. Yeah. But so underneath the clothesline where this thing went, it left a tuft of hair. Like, and it went under the clothesline. Some, you know, for whatever reason, and obviously had to bend down, and there were some clothespins and whatnot. And so they called the local sheriff. They came down. They brought the local veterinarian. Came down, took the sample, the hair, sent it off to the veterinarian, took it, sent it off to a lab, and they kept waiting and waiting and waiting. Never heard nothing back. Called them, and they denied ever even getting that sample. So there's a cover up, obviously, right there. Right. What, they had proof of it. They documented it with the local sheriff. They took pictures of it, and never heard nothing back. And every time they would call the lab back to get information, they would totally deny ever getting it. or anything. So, you know, it's a cover up. There's a lot of cover ups going on in this world that people, we don't know why, but you know, we don't know if Bigfoot is some kind of weird project the government came up with to cross ape and man, and that's what resulted. Who knows? But there's definitely a cover up.
Yeah, there was that one lab that was what was it? I saw it on Ventura's thing, conspiracy Plum theories.
Plum Island.
Yeah. You know, and God knows what came out of that place.
Mm-hmm. And we do know the government is experimenting all the time with different things. So why they mess with stuff like that, I don't know. Probably trying to create hybrid soldiers or some crazy
program. Well, yeah, they've always had that super soldier program. I mean, think about it. They were trying to feed the soldiers way back when with, what, cocaine and all kinds of other drugs and stuff to try to make the LSD, perfect soldier, LSD.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's crazy what it could possibly be. And the reasons, I mean, it doesn't go just that high. I mean, it goes high, but it even down to the local governments where, for example, when I watched that documentary because we're in Wisconsin here and we've got that, there's been a black cat scene quite often.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Home of the dog man too.
Well, yeah. Yeah. The Beast of Bray Road.
Yeah.
But they got, the feline, the black cat, they call it a panther, but we all know panthers don't exist because it's a pigment.
It's a pigmentation disease.
Right. Thank you. You know, but they say it's not possible in cougars. And it's like, okay, why not? If it's possible in the leopards and the jaguars and these other cats, why can't it be possible in the cougars and the mountain lions? Because that's what we have here. And that's more than likely what people are seeing. But yet DNR says, don't exist.
It's a hybrid. It could be a hybrid that they did, you know, and it got loose. Who knows? I mean, you know, there's eyelifting sightings still to this day. We've seen where they actually crossbred a tiger and a lion. They call it a liger. Yeah. And it's a massive creature, man. I mean, this thing
is very massive.
I would not want to run into one of those.
But it also it is fertile or not infertile. Mm-hmm. It can't be bred again. Mm-hmm.
But then again, like the guy from, like that guy, what's his name from Jurassic Park? Nature finds a way.
Life finds a way. Yeah. You never know.
You were talking about this Bigfoot that you guys seen that they measured the stride at 63 inches.
It was 62, I believe, 61 or 62. Yeah.
Another person that we actually talked to that's here in Wisconsin, we interviewed him. Wasn't he the last interview we had, Joe? Jay. He does investigations in Kettle Moraine Forest area here.
The southern part of Kettle Moraine Forest.
Yeah, the southern part.
Because he lives right close by it.
Right. Him and his wife actually went out.
Excuse me.
Bless you. Him and his wife were actually out on the trail after a snowfall, and they came across imprints which looked like foot imprints that were I think he said were 54 inches across.
Well, I mean, if you make it makes sense. Think about all the stories that are told about Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and all of that going across the road with like two steps, and they're from one side to the other in like two steps. Makes sense.
What rational person or regular person is going to run around in the woods with a bare feet? I mean, come on.
No,
in the snow.
Happening.
In the snow.
Not me.
I see that happening.
What? In some of those places in the woods, you don't even know what you're going to step on, for Christ's sake. I wouldn't want to be, you know, in Virginia, for example, I don't know what's there, but I know, I bet you there's poisonous snakes there compared to over here.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, not to mention just walking in your bare feet on rock and sticking up, stabbing your feet, and I mean, stickers.
God knows what. Yeah. Thorns, I don't think so.
Bushes, you get rocks.
Yeah.
You know, sharp rocks.
Nope.
Hell, when I was a kid, I used to wade barefoot in the river, and I wound up cutting my foot a couple of times.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Because of the rocks. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nobody in their right mind is going to be out in the woods, especially during the winter time.
Yeah, I would, you know, frostbite on my, yeah. I value my feet. I want to keep them.
So, since you bought that house, we'll go to that now. Since you bought that house and you've done investigations there, what's the strangest experience you may have had or evidence that you have caught?
Well, the best piece of evidence that's come out of there, and let me tell you, there's been a ton of it. The whole gambit from things moving on their own, EVPs, disembodied voices, people's equipment shutting off for no reason, fully charged batteries, the whole gambit of the, you know, what we look for in the paranormal, various equipment going off like crazy. And almost every single group I think I've ever talked to that has been in there has some really good evidence. There's only been one or two groups that didn't really capture much. So the house has a ton of history. Of course, it was built by Freemasons for a Mason, I believe, because there's a lot of Mason symbology in this house. It's built in the shape of a cross. And there's been numerous deaths in the house and at least two suicides, possibly three in the house over the years. Many sightings of apparitions, shadow figures, pictures of these things. And the latest one that was captured there, I've been filming a documentary there about the house and everything else. And so the guy I was filming with, he had stuck a GoPro camera, a regular GoPro, wasn't infrared, wasn't full spectrum, nothing, right up on top of one of the doors just for another angle while we were shooting like an interview with me talking inside the house. Well, there was only four of us there. We were all done shooting for the day, and we were in the back building. You can see the top of that back building there by the trees, in between the trees. That's a big like metal building with a cement floor. It's a garage basically. And we were in there packing all of our gear up. There was no one around the house, no one in the house. And we just loaded everything up. And he goes, "Oh crap, I forgot the GoPro in there." So he just ran in the house, grabbed it off the door, you know, and locked the door behind him, and we left. Well, about a month later, he calls me up freaking out, said, "I'm never going in an effing house again." I'm like, "What are you talking about, dude? What happened?" He's like, "I'm sending you a clip right now, and you should have it by now." So I went in my email, and there's a full-blown shadow figure in one of the rooms during broad daylight that is unlike anything I've ever seen before. So that's an apparition. Someone caught in the window of the old woman that died in the house. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of pictures like that and different people's evidence and whatnot. So, I mean, this shadow figure is pretty phenomenal. You can see it on my YouTube page. You just go to videos and scroll down and you'll see Shadow Man captured and just watch that video. So,
okay.
I'll have
to check that out. Yeah, I don't know. What's
cool about that, guys, is right before you see the shadow figure, there's all these unexplained knocks and bangs in the house and sounds like a dragging sound. And then you see the shadow figure, and I zoomed in on it so you can see it really good. And it walks across the room, and then it looks like something comes out of the room, like a white, misty, and a smoky, like, substance, you know, type of situation comes out of the room too. And it was captured like at 4:35 in the evening in broad daylight. Even if someone would have walked outside the house by the windows to create a shadow inside the house, you would have seen them through the other windows, and
you would have seen the shadow that was captured on film from probably maybe the waist up or the knees up if it was a person on the outside. The whole shadow figure is in the picture. It's in the house. So
you can also tell the difference too.
Oh yeah.
And the shadow that's on the wall.
Yep. You'll know it when you see it. I've never seen anything.
Rather than an apparition that's standing there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So check it out. I highly recommend you guys check it out.
I'll tell you, I don't think it'd faze me, because I've seen way too much in my youth to really be phased. I'm kind of jaded to a lot of this stuff. When you're sitting on the front stoop and you're kind of teed off at someone, and and you're trying to cool off, and you kind of glance over to your right and watch this enormous shadow figure just rise up out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it did. It just, like, it looked like it just stood right up. And this thing had to be, like, 9 feet tall at least. And mm-hmm. built like a brick outhouse.
He's a transplant from California, so...
Yeah, I come from Cali. I was born and raised out there and moved here in 93 to Wisconsin. But yeah. So, you know, stuff like that kind of jades you to a lot of the paranormal that we investigate.
Yeah, but, you know, what I'm talking about is, like, when you capture something on film that you can physically show others.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
You know, I know this stuff's real. I've had all kind of crazy experiences. But that's what, you know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to show people, hey, this stuff is all around us all the time, and you never know what you're going to get, man, especially when you go out definitely. Looking for it. When you go out looking for it, you can be, your life can be literally turned upside down. Let me tell you, I've been there.
Yeah, and there are people who are extremely sensitive to the supernatural and to the energies that are set off by these beings. And there are some people that are, I would put them as being, you know, in a box to where they can't sense anything.
Well, here's
way out of a wet paper bag type of thing.
Here's what I think about that, guys. So we all know they're skeptics because mm-hmm. everybody wants a rational explanation for something they can't explain. Fear is very powerful. And some people, when they realize they've seen something that they don't understand or they can't explain what it is, it's very frightening to them. And they just chalk it up, oh, it was just a trick of light, or it was just that, because their mind, in a sense, cannot rationalize what that just happened or what they saw. You know as well as I do, most of the time when you see apparitions or whatever, they're either out of your peripheral or they're behind you for whatever reason. Very rarely are you going to see one straight up. And I often tell people, hey, have an open mind. Don't be so closed off that, you know, just because you see a shadow, yeah, sure, it doesn't mean it's paranormal related. But when the hair on the back of your neck stands, listen to your body. Because when the hair on the back of your neck and your arm stands up, we all have that built-in fight or flight. And that's there for a reason. That your body is your best tool when it comes to this stuff. If something's telling you, I need to get the hell out of there, get the hell out of there, because your body is a powerful tool and it can pick up on different energies and whatnot.
No, yeah, I agree with you on that. The only difference that I have to say on that is the fact that, yeah, fight or flight, I have yet to have the flight response. I am always the one that if I feel that there's something there, I want to know it. I want to see it. I even want to touch it. Mm-hmm. And I don't run. I stand my ground.
No, that's what we do. But Joe Blow paranormal enthusiasts, most times they're going to haul ass if they don't see something. You know? I mean, if they see something, they, you know, but, you know, there's a big difference in them and what we, you know, what I do and what you guys do. And that's what we do. We're there trying to show proof of this stuff and document it. So,
well, it's not just because I'm trying to show proof. I mean,
well, we've also debunked some things too.
Yeah, of course. I have debunked stuff.
Yeah, you got to. We've debunked our own work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm my own worst skeptic. If I film something or get something on tape, I try to debunk it. I try to make sense of it. Other than that, it's something that's an out of body, or a no, you know, an apparition or mm-hmm. an energy source that's causing it, that's not of, you know, of physical form.
Sure.
So mm-hmm. that's what makes me my own worst skeptic, because I will actually take and go back to a site if I got the opportunity to and try to recreate exactly what I think mm-hmm. I caught.
But, you know, if you think about that, it's almost nearly impossible. You may have had a true paranormal experience, but scientifically, you're not going to make these things do tricks, so to speak, upon request. I mean,
no,
but you go back and try to recreate it.
exactly how it happened, then you're saying, okay, this is possibly, okay, we can look for a cause for this now. Maybe it is debunkable or whatnot. But if you can't, then you have to sit there and say, wait a minute, man. You know, right. we may have captured the so-called Holy Grail right here or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So, yeah, obviously, you as investigators and researchers, you have to try to debunk everything you can. That's why it's called the paranormal. It can't be duplicated scientifically most of the time. So if it can be, it's most likely not paranormal, obviously.
Right. Well, that's like we went back. Well, you sort of saw that shadow. We thought we saw a shadow figure at Forest Hill Cemetery.
Yeah,
We went back, we recorded, did it again, got the same thing, and it was pretty much, we figured it out. It was just the time of day we were out there, the trees, the way the sun was positioned in the sky at the time, you know, and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Well, yeah, trees, because,
like you said. You gotta realize your environment when you're around too doing this. Especially when you're outdoors.
Just a little bit and the lighting's right, the trees will scare the hell out of you. Because they'll create all kind of spooky looking shadows, man, out there.
How this happened is Joe actually said that he thought he saw something in a specific direction. And it's what was it, Joe? It was like late July, early August that we were out there.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
it was middle of summer.
It was still summertime. Mosquitoes like crazy. And I didn't think to bring spray for one. So I had the camera. I was holding the camera and filming. And he's like over here in this direction. So I moved it over. And I had really bad shaky camera work because of the fact that I'm trying to film where he wants. And I'm fighting mosquitoes off at the same time.
tripod.
That's yes. So when we went back out there the following day, we made sure we were there around the exact same time. So we had, you know, a similar, at least very similar of,
yeah, that,
of
that second time though, we did,
and I put it on a tripod this time. I tripoded it. I got it in the same direction and I kind of figured it out at that point.
Because we were more prepared when we went back. Because we took that second time back, that was like three trips in one day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. Yeah.
We went to three different locations in one day all around that one area in Madison. So,
but yeah, whenever I put it on the tripod, I was able to figure out what happened. It was.
Well, common sense prevails a lot of times.
It was the way the light was coming through and the way the trees were. It gave us an appearance that there was somebody standing by a headstone.
Yeah, and it would have been right down by the Civil War area too.
Yeah, it was down by where the Civil War soldiers are buried. So,
yep.
But we actually have that up on our website. So
it's like one of the oldest cemeteries in Madison,
on our YouTube channel.
And it's got everything from Civil War soldiers, World War One, World War Two.
And I think even Vietnam in there.
Vietnam, Korea, they're all there.
They're pretty much all of them, you know, the soldiers from all those eras.
It's kind of like a little Madison Arlington Cemetery or something, you know. It's mostly soldiers.
I don't get a lot of Madison cemeteries, and I've done a ton of them. And, you know, the only ones I seem to have captured anything that may be legit is cemeteries where various groups have gone in and attempted to conjure things and other sorts of things like that. But as far as cemeteries go, you know, I'm a firm believer in places are haunted because some sort of tragic event or, you know, occurred there, like battlefields or murder scenes or car accidents. Because in my point of view, sometimes these spirits don't even know they're dead. They died so fast. These people, you know, died so fast or tragically that they don't even know they died, man, at this point.
Right.
You know, their energy's still moving around like they're still up and kicking with us.
In cemeteries, you know? There's also
point of view, so.
Well, in cemeteries, I also have that, you know, how, like, I don't know. I tend to watch some of those shows too much, but some of them are pretty realistic, you know, like Supernatural and stuff like that.
I love that show. It feels awesome.
Right, right. So, like, how they have where, you know, the spirit, instead of, you know, how they, like, burn the bones to get rid of the spirit in that show, okay? Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's not just that. It's like maybe there's, like, a ring or something that they've attached to, or an object.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, how many times does jewelry and personal objects get buried with the dead?
All the time.
So what's to say that they can't haunt those cemeteries because of that object is still got them attached?
Yeah. If you talk to my good buddy John Zaffis, he'll tell you all about those haunted objects.
Right.
You know, right. I mean, for whatever reason, I do feel that energy does attach to some objects in particular, so whether they were used in a ceremony or they're someone's favorite item or whatever the case.
Oh yeah, definitely. So being down there in Virginia like that, I take it you probably been up by Gettysburg.
Oh yeah. I've investigated Gettysburg many times and gotten some pretty freaky stuff there, man. I like to go in the areas that are, you know, I've been on the main battlefield many, many times and got some EVPs and things like that. But one place that I went that blew me away was the actual site of the cavalry battle. You know, it was a couple miles away from the main battle because it happened. That's what really kicked off the battle, because they accidentally met up. Both cavalries met up over there and they started fighting. And I was walking through a place, there's monuments there, and it, you know, a place where a lot of guys got killed. There was a whole bunch of guys dead right there on that one spot. And I'm walking through, and I'm just, you know, I like to kind of use triggers when I'm investigating. I'll say, hey, who needs a shot of whiskey, or who needs water? And I got an EVP that said, it was a guy, and he said, water, just like that, like he was wounded and he wanted water. You know, it was really, it still sends a little bit of shiver down my back. And then right after that, I got another EVP. It sounded like someone's last dying breath, that real big exhale, like, you know, yep. when they're dying. And then a little bit later, I'm over there by where some of the cannon sites were during the cavalry battle. And I started, you know, I'm ex-military, so I started out yelling out military commands, fire at will, fire at will. And I kid you not, I got several bursts of musket fire and far off cannon shots.
Wow.
And I got it on the recorder and on my camera's audio. So once I reviewed that and I found it on there, I was like, holy crap. I started calling all around Gettysburg. I said, was anyone lighting off fireworks? Was there any, you know, this is 10:30 at night, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
On the cavalry side, they really don't monitor that, so you can go over there anytime, because there's actually a couple of houses that are on that battlefield site, so they can't restrict access to it. So you can go park your car and just walk around and investigate. So I called all around. I tried to find out any information I could, and they're like, no, man, nobody does reenactments at 10 anytime during the night out here. You know, it all shuts down. And it was in the late fall too, so there was nothing going on in Gettysburg at this time. Mm-hmm. So I was like, holy crap, that's awesome. You know, I mean, I was able to call out military commands and got a response. So, you know, that's what keeps me going in this stuff. And it's phenomenal to me when you capture stuff like that. I'm like, how the hell do you explain that? You can't.
You can't.
So whenever you did your investigations there at Gettysburg, did you feel that you got more of intelligent or more of residuals?
A little of both. It's kind of, I'd say a half and a half, you know, because like I said, the way I investigate is I tend to try to interact with them like I'm actually there with them and yell, you know, like I did yelling out the commands. Hey, that's my friend Natalie. Hey, Natalie. So, I mean, you know, you get standard EVPs out there, and there's a lot of people, not just myself, a lot of other people have interacted with spirits there. They've captured some phenomenal things on tape. Some of that stuff, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen that one of those two guys that just pulled over in the battlefield and those soldiers just started manifesting and walking out there.
I've seen a lot of videos from Gettysburg.
I've seen some, but I haven't. I don't know if I've seen that particular one.
Oh man, it was several years ago. It was a hot item on the internet, man. I mean, these two guys were, you know, they're just enthusiasts. They were going out there and they want to go on the battlefield and see if they capture something. So they pulled the car over on that main strip, right, that goes right through the center of the battlefield. And they're sitting there by some cannons, and you see, like, I think it's like three or four apparitions just come out of nowhere, and they're in full, I mean, they're
Civil
in
War gear. Civil War gear, yeah. I've seen the video.
And they just walk around for a minute, and then they just disappear. Yeah, it's phenomenal. And it, you know, from what I understand, I can't confirm or deny that, but what I understand, that piece of film was gone over by experts and said no, there was anything on that at all. So when you, and then, you know, there's just all kind, you know, even local residents, I've interviewed numerous ones, and they said, man, we'll be sleeping at 10, 12, 1 in the morning, and you'll hear call, boom, like a cannon went off right beside our house, and we come flying out of the bed. Said it happens all the time, and the whole house will shake and all kinds of stuff. So, you know.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, because everybody we've talked to that's been in and around the Gettysburg and done their you know, investigations there, they have always come back and talked to us about it and said how amazing the activity was there. And that also goes to explain, you know, when you get to that part, like you say, it's the original 13 colonies of the United States, you know, it's where it all started, you know, with all of that added on top of all the Native American stuff that went on in that area. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, there's bound to be tons of activity. And then to top it all off, you've got the oldest feud in America going on in that same region. Mm-hmm. You know,
yep.
Think about all that bloodshed going on. The paranormal activity in that area, in that region of the United States, has just got to be off the charts.
Yeah. And then, you know, you've got all, you know, the early settlers that came in here in West Virginia, you know, were primarily Irish, Scotch, Irish, Scottish. And then there were some Germans and Irish that came into the northern part. So they bring all of their folklore as well. And, you know, it's a hodgepodge of paranormal activity here. You know, I mean, we've got it all, you know, a lot of people don't even know this. I wrote about it in my UFO book too. So you had the 1952 Flatwoods Monster incident here, right? Blue Book was involved. All that stuff went down. It was worldwide news. And not 6 years later, a government-funded project was built right here in the state of West Virginia called the Green Bank Observatory, where they actively search for extraterrestrial life to this very day. The largest movable land object in the world, which is a ginormous telescope, radio telescope, is at that facility. And there's no coincidence in that, man. I mean, Carl Sagan and Frank Drake started SETI right here in West Virginia after the Flatwoods Monster incident. And in the 1960s, West Virginia was considered the UFO hotspot of the world. A lot of people don't know that. If you research it, you can find newspaper articles of it and everything else. So, you know, yeah, I mean, that's the connection I was trying to make for folks in the book. I've got account after account dating back to the 1800s here that I uncovered in local churches, you know, back in the old days. And it was so rural here that people didn't get a lot of outside news from, like, say, New York and stuff. So everybody would tell their reports and their experiences to the local churches. So I've got documents going back to the 1800s of these massive airships that were, you know, kind of described like a blimp. And only the only thing was there was no blimps like that back in those days either. So, and we're talking late 1700s, early 1800s, all the way up into the 1900s. And they describe these ships as going from one mountaintop to the other, which would mean it was miles across. So you've got all those types of accounts all the way up into modern day time. And I give little snippets of the accounts and then more modern accounts with abductions. And then the Blue Book and Frank Drake, Carl Sagan, starting SETI here, you know, it's a whole big interconnection thing. So.
All right. And then you add in the cover up of the Men in Black.
Yeah. Well, there was Men in Black here for the Flatwoods Monster incident, Men in Black here for the Mothman incidents. I mean, just in the Mothman
started in, wasn't it Point Pleasant, West Virginia?
Point Pleasant. And that's, you know, there was thousands upon thousands of UFO sightings during that whole, like, say, 10-year time frame, rough estimate. It was so prevalent. In fact, people would rush home from work, eat dinner with their families, get in their cars, and go out to where the bunkers were, park their cars, and watch the lights in the sky. And it was like a nightly thing. And it blows my mind that people are not, like, you know, demanding answers from the government. What the hell were we seeing? Because it's just like, well, it's UFOs, and then of course the government covers it all up over and over and over again.
Well, one of the reasons that they probably covered it up back then was because they didn't want to panic the public. At least that's what they say.
Yeah, that's one excuse for you.
But if you look at it, if you look at the way things are now, with the way that Hollywood has done, I mean, they have brought to the silver screen all these different stories of UFOs, and they went from the point where the UFOs or the aliens were dangerous and evil and everything, all the way to the point where the UFOs and the aliens were very helpful and friendly.
Well,
so with all of that in there, I'm wondering if that wasn't something that the government was behind too, to try and get people jaded on UFOs or on aliens.
Of course it was.
You know, because if you're watching this stuff in a movie, you're going to wind up getting jaded to it.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Once you're jaded to it, it's going to be easier for you to accept that it's actually true.
Yeah, absolutely. You're 100% right. They drip feed it to us. They slowly introduce it year after year, more and more in depth. And that's what, and the government and Hollywood are like this, guys. I mean, they are involved in projects together all the time. A lot of in early days of, you know, when Hollywood was big in the 60s and 70s, there was, you know, ex-government officer, you know, military officers that went into Hollywood and were in charge of creating films with Hollywood, man, on alien topics and various other ones. Well, you know, Close Encounters is based off of a real event. People don't realize that it is based off of a real event that occurred at Holloman Air Force Base. I mean,
right? But they made it in Wyoming. That particular movie truly made Devil's Tower extremely famous.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That is one of the coolest buttes that we have in this nation, too. I mean, it's one of the largest. In fact, I believe it is the largest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And here's a little tidbit for you. Some actual scientists claim that Devil's Tower, Wyoming, isn't really a true butte. It's actually the stump of an ancient tree that has fossilized.
Petrified
from the ancient forest on the earth.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Now,
and there again, Tom's Nephilim comes in on that.
Yeah. Well, think about this. Remember in the movie Avatar, giant trees that those people lived under.
The Avatar? Yeah.
Yeah, ginormous trees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
they lived inside the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're at that mark.
Yep. So, you know,
time to end for bonus.
Yep. Okay. So is there, besides the website we got scrolling at the bottom, is there any other website that you have or anything else you want to add?
I mean, just all my links are on there, man.
You can find his YouTube link on there.
Yep. There's a new project I am involved with called, Scare Network TV. We're doing all original content, real quality stuff, and we'll be launching that as soon as we get a lot more content to put up for folks. And it's a streaming service, so you can buy each project by itself or buy a subscription and save a lot of money if you buy a year when you get like 10% off.
Cool.
And it's the real deal. It's not Hollywood fied investigating. We'll be covering every topic in the paranormal, and I encourage folks to come and check it out. And I'll be posting it all over my stuff as soon as we get it fully up and running very soon. We film several projects. The format we're working on is there's going to be a podcast once a week. There also will be some shorts every week, a short investigation or local legend type things. And then at least once, probably twice a quarter, a full-blown documentary investigation that will be very eye-opening to folks. And it's the real thing, you know, not Hollywood-fied, none of that stuff. So, you know, looking forward to that. It's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. And we've been planning it since last year. So, you know, and we're going to encourage other folks to put up content on the scarenetwork.tv as well. You know, we want other folks to be involved in it. So, you know, it's going to be good stuff. And more books coming out too, guys. Lots more books.
Cool.
And some TV projects I'm working on right now.
And all those books can be found on Amazon, by the way, too.
Yeah, this Amazon, just look up my name on Amazon. It'll come up under authors, and you can. And there's a movie I was involved in on there, too. You can buy it called Flatwoods Monster Legacy of Fear with Small Town Monsters. I was in that show with Seth Breedlove because I'm a local here, you know. Right now, that happened right up the road from me, right where I'm at right now. So my first cousins and all them went to school with the original witnesses. So they used to talk about when I remember hearing them, my mom's first cousins and them say how scared they were of the Flatwoods Monster growing up. You know, they didn't want to walk home from the bus or nothing, man, or walk, you know, from school. They were scared to death.
All right, cool. All right.
And tomorrow night we're going to be.
We do have a brand new documentary coming out, guys, real soon called Malefice. It's going to blow some people's minds. It's me and Sean Austin and Ralph Sarchi's involved, and it kind of entails. We went to this location 5 years ago, and ever since that time, something's been following us and messing, particularly with my buddy Sean Austin. You might know him from Demon Files and Ghost Loop. But he has something that has messed with him since that time. And it's a whole, but the stuff we got there when we went back will blow your freaking minds. You know, it's just some phenomenal stuff.
Looking forward to seeing that one.
It's kind of a full circle thing for us. We had to go back and we wanted to get rid of that thing. And we did, basically an exorcism of the property and everything. And we filmed it all, but we investigated it for 3 days before we did the clearing of the place. So it's pretty intense, man. We're still reviewing evidence from it, and the stuff we're getting is like, whoa, wait a minute. So I'm excited to share that with you guys. It's the first time I've shared talking about it. So it's going to be coming out in the next few months, more than likely.
All right. Joe?
And Thursday, tomorrow, we are going to be on Mind Dog TV, 7 p.m. Central. We're going to be on the other end of the spectrum, though.
We're going to be the interviewees.
Yeah, we're going to be the guests. Friday, we return with David Heatherly. And Saturday, we will be on Beth Allen's show.
As interviewees again.
We got a full week ahead of us. All right. Stay safe. And remember, anything's possible.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right.